And it's about 15 seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Monday, the 12th of June. This is a Juneau Afternoon. The weather forecast for today is a high temperature in the mid-50s and widespread rain showers downtown and out in the valley with some light winds. And it looks like that for the rest of the week. This afternoon, on a Juneau Afternoon, we have Jody Dixon from the Yoga Path. And also some folks here from Aware to talk about a workshop. Some friends from Perseverance Theater here to talk about the new play, Treadwell Gold, and from Curious Juno, a discussion about that junk on top of Mount Juno. So stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon coming up after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus in for Antonia Gonzalez. Opening arguments begin today in Santa Fe, New Mexico, in a lawsuit that alleges the state violated the rights of several groups of students, including Native Americans. The Mexican American Legal Defense Fund, or MALDEF, and the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty each filed lawsuits that were later consolidated in 2015. The suits, Martinez v. State of New Mexico and Yazzie v. State of New Mexico, allege the state failed to meet constitutional obligations to serve economically disadvantaged students, Native Americans, English language learners, and students with disabilities. The key issue in the cases is funding for public education. New Mexico lawmakers have grappled in recent years with budget deficits, and education funding has remained flat, despite local districts raising concerns about rising costs. State officials have argued that current funding is adequate and pointed to efforts in recent years to increase accountability for schools that serve disadvantaged students. New Mexico has one of the highest rates of child poverty in the nation and the lowest high school graduation rate. The Bureau of Land Management and Bureau of Indian Affairs recently announced new developments and plans to manage oil and gas exploration in the San Juan Basin. The Associated Press reports the newly released scoping report is part of a multi-year process by the federal government to evaluate drilling around Chaco Canyon. Nearby tribes, including the Navajo Nation, have raised concerns about drilling near key cultural sites and the potential environmental impact of increased oil and gas development. The BLM said officials will continue to consult with tribal leaders, and there's now a 10-mile buffer around Chaco Canyon during the planning process. The AP reports the federal plan is expected to be completed by 2020. The National Congress of American Indians is holding its mid-year conference this week. Tribal leaders will talk about key issues in Indian country like education, technology, and transportation. Rhonda Livaldo is there and sent us this preview.
NCAI starts its mid-year conference in Connecticut with key players in the president's administration attending. The Federal Communications Commissioner, Chairman Ajit Pai, Department of the Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, and DOI Associate Deputy Secretary James Kaysen are to join NCAI at the conference. The theme is Sovereign Infrastructure, Building Our Communities Through Our Values. The four-day event features a range of cultural events and meetings that reflect the strength and vision it takes to uphold tribal values in the face of change and to build communities in ways that reflect who they are as a people. This is Rhonda Livaldo for National Native News.
Educators are meeting at Santa Ana Pueblo this week for the annual Native American Student Advocacy Institute. The conference is put on by the College Board, which aims to increase access to higher education. Now in its 10th year, the conference brings together leaders from around Indian country to talk about best practices for addressing the needs of American Indian, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian students as they transition from high school to college. Sessions will cover topics like cultural awareness and sensitivity in higher education, preparing for medical school, and support for students in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. Eugene Braverock, a member of the Blood Tribe in Alberta, Canada, is getting a lot of attention right now for his role in the new film Wonder Woman. The CBC and other Canadian outlets reported that a ceremony was held last week to honor Braverock and his community. Family and friends at the event told reporters the actor has stayed connected to his Indigenous culture as he pursued film roles in the United States. Braverock also made an appearance in the film Batman vs. Superman in 2016. At the ceremony, he encouraged children to pursue their goals but remain grounded in their culture. I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
The third National Gathering of American Indian Veterans takes place July 21st through the 23rd in Wheaton, Illinois, with World War II code talkers and Native bands and dancers. Information at TricksterGallery.com. Proud to support this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Square.
All right, then. So it's 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and this is a Juno afternoon, this Monday, the 12th of June. So I want to welcome Jody Dixon from the Yoga Path as our first guest today. How are you today, Jody?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you here, and I actually have been on the air for a while, so it's good to come back with someone who, as we were talking about a moment ago before we started the show, does something that I admire. I admire from a distance. I admire from a temporal distance. I used to try to do it. It's been a long time. So I'm a lapsed, very, very entry-level yoga would-be practitioner. And I imagine you get all different kinds of people who are experts and people who are new to it. What's that like to try to meet people where they are?
It's a really wonderful challenge to see each person. And instead of just teaching postures, actually teaching people and seeing and hearing where they are, where they're arriving on their yoga mat, and offering them something to get started. And then if they come back, the next step and the phases to continue exploring and finding the benefits in their yoga practice that are accessible to them, but still, here's some challenge, here's the next step. It can be as easy as any person needs, yet there's a lifetime of challenge. So that's what's really great, to have that broad spectrum of places to start and avenues to send people on their journey so that everybody can be doing the practice that's appropriate for them.
And speaking of that getting started, how did yoga become part of your life initially?
Back pain drove me to the yoga mat initially, and I just found that was a key element to resolving the back pain, and didn't really necessarily know it at that time, but integrating core strength and movement and body awareness and just not even understanding all the benefits at the beginning, but feeling it, I just kept coming back. And then there's the desire to read a little more and learn some of the different levels of benefits in the practice, so much more than stretching.
Right. And so maybe that's good for our listeners, because not everyone knows. How would you answer the question, what is yoga?
That's a really great question. It could be a really simple answer that yoga can be described as union, and that can be taken from different perspectives or different opinions, and it could be union of your breath and movement, union of your breath, body, and spirit. I think just getting on the mat for anyone, if you're starting yoga, just union with your body in any way. We are often fairly disconnected when we arrive on the yoga mat. Often pain drives us there, or nagging stiffness, or just that desire to have a little mental clarity. All of that is developed when we do our yoga practice, and all of those benefits are part of union in some way of our body, some layers and aspects.
Well, certainly there are a lot of people in this town and in the whole world that really like yoga a lot. So after you were initially drawn to it because of your own pain, and you obviously found that it worked, what was your journey from being a student to being a teacher as you are now?
For me, had taught other disciplines before, whitewater kayaking and skiing and such, and so the teaching part just kind of came together. And of course, the more I practice, the more I understand how important my practice is to teaching. And I do have a registered yoga school with the Yoga Alliance. And in my teacher training, that's the number one message, is that if you're going to be teaching, you have to have your own practice first. And then your own experience matching up with the other studies that you've done, the other literature that you're learning from, that's a really deep well to then share with students. You will never be stuck for what to say. If you are practicing yoga on a regular basis, there's always so much to share.
And so you are now a teacher, a practitioner with your own studio, your own program, the Yoga Path. Tell us a little bit about that, how long that's been in existence, where it's physically located, and some of those particulars.
Yeah, so I've been open about 2.5 years, and we are on Shawn Drive, which is in the Costco Lemon Creek area, so just down the street from the Alaskan Brewing Company, and just above a heated storage unit, so it's nice and quiet down below us. And I have a full schedule, so there's classes every day of the week, and morning classes start as early as 5:30 a.m., and the Mysore practice, if people look at the schedule, that's a method of practice where you practice at your own pace, and I'm there observing people and helping them as they need. So if somebody were brand new, they get a little bit more help at the beginning, and then when they come back the next day, they practice what they were taught, and then they learn a little bit more, and so on and so forth. So it's not a super overwhelming initial practice. And then over time, your practice builds up to be, you know, an hour, hour and a half maybe, but your body has integrated it. It's not a whole big thing to memorize all at once. It's, again, a sustainable progression.
And nothing impossible to countenance or hurdle by trying to do too much at once. You start off with the basics, and they're building blocks.
Exactly. And then there's, you know, noon classes where people get to be talked through the postures, and evening classes, because a lot of times morning and noon is just no way, no how for some people's schedules. So there's the classic 5:30 to 7 p.m. led classes. And we also have workshops like this week starting on the 15th through the 19th. So it's over 5 days. We have Peg Mulqueen coming up, and she's wonderful. I got to study with her and Taylor Hunt, which I'll talk about in a moment briefly, that I'm excited about having the opportunity to have studied with both of them. And the wonderful thing about the growth of yoga as a practitioner and teacher and then sharing it with students is there is a lineage, there is a long line of teaching. And thank goodness, otherwise we'd be recreating the wheel every generation. So to keep reaching out to senior teachers, learning from them, and then to bring them here to share with other people is really exciting.
Before we talk about the special workshop and some of these yoga celebrities, the one you have coming to town, as far as the regular classes go, are they segregated by gender, by age, by skill level, or is it kind of a hodgepodge?
It isn't all mixed. The only exception is in the wintertime, we do offer a men's yoga on Saturday from 4:30 to 6 with Mike Miller. Other than that, all ages, all gender, always welcome. If somebody's brand new, they might be directed to more of the newer classes, or classes that on the hard copy schedule have a little smiley face. It says, welcome beginners. And then I also have yoga immersions, which run usually January, one in the spring. We just finished one a week or so ago, and then one in October. So those are month-long, okay, I want to do yoga. I am committing to a month of practice, and then at the end, you either have the habit and love it and keep going, or say, you know what, can't do it, I need more sleep, or you come to whatever conclusion.
But it's a self-contained period, so it's not like I'm going to sign up for this and then if I give up, I'm a failure. You're going to try it for 1 month and see where you are after a month.
Exactly. See what the benefits feel like and go from there.
Excellent. So now, of course, yoga really, if it's done right, can have significant health benefits. But unfortunately, yoga classes are probably not covered by most forms of health insurance.
Correct.
And so that's just unfortunate. But that doesn't mean it's not worth doing. Like many alternative therapies, you just have to decide to do it, even if it's not something that you can get your medical insurance plan or whatever to pay for. So we talked a little bit before we came on the air about people who do yoga on their own at home. And like I used to try to, and it's been at least a year since I did. Are you able to work with people in that regard to teach them the do-it-yourself skills, if that's more comfortable for them than being in a class environment?
Yeah, and that happens in a couple of ways. On occasion, I do private lessons and help people get set up with a plan that they could practice at home. My preference is that they would come to a morning Mysore class so that they have the energy of the room. There's other people there. You're not the only one working hard. And you learn a sequence. So Ashtanga yoga is a sequenced practice. Although there's a set sequence, there's many different ways to do the postures, just given each student, each body, what works for you. And once you have learned the sequence, that is the only thing you need to really have to do yoga at home. If you already know the sequence and you feel comfortable that you are doing the postures and healthy alignment and you've kind of got the hang of it, then when you can't come to class, you can do that at home.
Mm-hmm. And by sequence, you know, some people want to start off and do several standing positions and then go down on the ground and do their seated ones and then wrap it up at the end of that sort of thing.
That's right, exactly.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about Peg Mulqueen, who you said is coming to town.
Yeah.
And she's renowned.
Yeah. And she's actually, I think a lot of yoga practitioners have heard of Wonderlust. Those are big events that happen all over the States. And she's teaching at several of those events this year. She also publishes and produces the Ashtanga Dispatch. She's been to India and studied with the guru of Ashtanga Yoga, Sharat, and she's also studied with a host of other teachers. She's got a master's degree in psychology, just a really wonderful wealth of information and a super big heart.
And she's going to be here for this special five-day learning opportunity.
Yes.
So if people want to learn more generally about the yoga path and your course schedule and tuition and things like that, and also specifically about Peg, where might they be able to go and do that?
On theyogapath.com.
Very good. That's your website?
Yes.
Okay. And is it interactive to the extent that people can sign up on the website?
Yes. People can sign up. They can view our teachers' profiles, and they can sign up for just a single class, drop-ins, punch cards, unlimited passes. I have discounts for youth. That's not on the website, but if you just come in, I can help you out with that anytime.
What about seniors?
I don't currently have discounts for seniors, but I have a five-pack punch card for $50, which gets you, $10 a class, which is a pretty great rate. So.
That's a lot less expensive than many other forms of recreation or physical exercise, and certainly a lot less expensive than a lot of other traditional forms of medical therapy.
Yes.
Okay, you mentioned another yoga luminary, Taylor Hunt.
Yes.
So, and you have a book by Taylor Hunt.
I do. And when I went to Bozeman to study with Peg, Taylor was there as well, so I was really delighted to practice with him. Wonderful teacher. He is also the author of Away from Darkness, and it's his story of addiction, recovery, and yoga. And yoga was a huge part of his recovery. If anyone reads it, you'll learn that it's amazing he's still alive, and he's really passionate about sharing yoga with anyone that's working on recovery and would like to utilize the practice of yoga. For him, it was absolutely instrumental.
Well, and that, of course, is just one more reason why it is kind of ironic that it can't be considered a medical service that's covered, because obviously our society is spending vast amounts of time and resources dealing with addictions. And, boy, if this works for people, then it certainly needs to be a tool in the toolkit.
Exactly. And, you know, as we also talked about before we got started, is yoga is not just for flexible people or vegetarians.
Or Hindus.
Yeah. You know, you
Beatles
can have any faith, no faith. I don't care what you eat. I only care that you want to come do yoga and make some changes.
Excellent. So the website is actually, because you said you could learn about it on the Yoga Path, but the website actually is onthe yogapath.
Yes.
And so that's ontheyogapath.com, and Jody Dixon is the proprietor and the instructor, the main instructor at the Yoga Path here in Juneau. So Jody, anything else you'd like for our listeners to think about as we wrap up this afternoon?
You know, I thought it was a really great quote from a student recently that I'll read. It's on our current schedule. She made a comment and said, I thought it, meaning yoga, was elitist or exclusive before I started. I have been pleased to find it to be one of the most welcoming and humble groups of folks ever. And that was by Libby. So thanks for letting me share your quote, Libby.
Excellent. So, yeah, it's not just for Gwyneth Paltrow anymore.
No.
No, but no insult meant there to Gwyneth Paltrow. Well, thank you so much, Jody Dixon, and for coming on and sharing about the Yoga Path. And, again, you can go to www.ontheyogapath.com, learn more about what is on offer there. And I wish you all the best for the rest of this week and for your special seminar coming up, Jody.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. Yes, I'm sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. You used to rock me in the cradle of your arms. You said you'd hold me till the pains of life were gone. You said you'd comfort me in times like these, and now I need you. I need gone. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. Since you've gone and left me, there's been so little beauty, though I know I saw it clearly through your eyes. Now the world outside is such a cold and bitter place. Here inside I have few things that would console. But when I try to hear your voice above the storms of life, then I remember all the things that I was told. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. Yes, I'm sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty.
It is 24 minutes after the hour. This is the Juneau Afternoon. I'm Ben Brown. I'm here with Sarah Lynn Tabachnik in the studio, and we have Lee Giordano, who is the Director of Training for Men Stopping Violence. And I should say everyone knows who Sarah Lynn is, but she runs the women's shelter, AWARE, here in Juneau.
Great. Thanks, Ben.
And so good to see you, Sarah Lynn. And Lee, can you hear us on the phone?
I can. Hi. It's good to be with you.
Excellent. Yeah, well, good. I'm so happy to have both of you here. And my notes tell me that We're going to talk about an AWARE workshop, and I know nothing more, so it's very exciting. So, Sarah Lynn, you want to start us off?
Sure. I'll broad stroke. Men's Stopping Violence is an agency that's been doing fantastic work with thousands of men for decades, and we're lucky to have a couple of guys come, including Lee, coming to Juneau next week, June 19th to 21st, that's Monday through Wednesday, to do a training. We're inviting men to end violence against women in their lives and in our community. So if you're a guy who wants to learn how to make the world safer for your mothers, for your sisters, for your daughters, if you want to know how to raise your sons who will continue your good work, if you're a woman, if you identify as any gender and just are interested in this, we welcome and invite you.
And this is a really very open, general program. This is not a batterer's intervention program. This isn't something that's been mandated by a court for someone who has a specific personal problem that they're trying to solve. This is more about a holistic societal approach to ending violence.
Right. So the first 2 days of the training, it's a three-day training. The first 2 days are more about engaging men in this work. And the second 2 days do have a little bit of a focus of how do you intervene with men who have used violence and how to be helpful in that.
And how to be a friend, how to be a spouse or a son or a daughter of one of those people. Because that's the truth is men who are violent do have families. They're real people. They're not just statistics. They're not just defendants in the court system.
That's right.
So, well, Lee, tell us a little bit about your organization, Men Stopping Violence, and your position there as director of training.
Sure. So we were founded in 1982 by a couple men who were interested in doing what they could do to end violence against women in their communities. At the time in 82, the role of men at the time was to intervene with men. So they were asked to teach a batterer intervention program. We've been doing that for just 35 years now. And we have, a lot has changed since then. So we have modified our approach. We have changed with the times. And we now do prevention along with intervention. And so this training is going to model that approach. So we're going to spend the first 2 days focused on prevention. We have a lot of experience engaging men, getting men excited about the work to end violence against women. But we're also going to stay rooted in our roots and focus on intervention. So we'll be sharing strategies to address men who are abusive to women.
And so by intervention, that could be the victim of the violence, or it could be an observer or someone who's just aware of it, or it could just be someone who's friends with someone who may be subject to this sort of violent behavior.
Well, we're going to focus specifically on, the second half of the training will focus specifically on men who are the perpetrators of the violence, but our overall philosophy is focused on community accountability. And so what we mean by that is that it's not just the individuals who are perpetrating the violence who need to be held accountable. It's our entire community that both needs to work to hold individuals accountable, but also we have work to hold our community organizations and institutions accountable for the ways that they may ignore or even support men who are abusive. And so, like you said, we do want friends to engage their friends who may be using abusive or controlling behaviors, but we also want bosses to engage their employees who may be abusive, or faith leaders to engage men in their faith community who may be abusive. And so this training will focus on that approach, where we're not just going to focus on individual men, but we're also going to look at the broader social systems in our communities and see what we can work to change in all of it.
Well, that sounds very much needed, very timely. Sarah Lynn, how long has AWARE been trying to kind of branch out and provide this sort of training to the community? Is this a fairly new initiative?
Bringing this group to town is quite new, and as I said, we're so excited about it because they are state of the art, you know, doing things that are working. And so the first 2 days of training, we're open to everyone attending. And so much so that while there's a $350 fee that we're asking, we're also willing to negotiate that down to whatever someone is comfortable paying. Because as Lee was saying, and as you were also saying, really it's a whole community that can hold men who use abusive and controlling behaviors accountable. And so trying to work together to do that. So, you know, there have been other times Aware has brought trainers to town, but this is one of the most exciting, and we've got some folks coming from other places in the state, particularly for both parts of the training, some who are facilitating batterers intervention programs other places in the state who want to learn more about the second part of the training.
And those would be folks who work at some of the other shelters in the network of the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
That's right.
Where, in the interest of full disclosure, I should admit I am a volunteer attorney. I do the information and referral hotline from time to time, and I certainly used to volunteer for clients when I was in private practice. And the network really does believe that it can't just be about putting out fires. You've got to stop them from starting in the first place. So it just sounds like this is absolutely in that vein of thought, that sort of preventative mindset.
Right.
So, Lee, have you been able to do training like this in Alaska before?
This will be my first time coming to Alaska, so I'm very excited to check out Juneau and got some plans to go hiking, so very, very excited about coming out there. We have done a lot of training, both internationally and nationally, and this is the sort of work that Men Stopping Violence is called to do. We want to share our approach, our promising practices, our strategies with everyone so that we can work together to end violence against women.
Excellent. Well, as you probably know, Alaska does have some pretty non-enviable statistics about the levels of domestic violence and sexual assault and abuse that we really can't be proud of, but at the same time, that just means that there's that much more reason for you to come here, because we're a state and a society that really need to address this problem head on. So I welcome you up in that regard. You probably didn't hear me do the weather forecast at the beginning of the show, but I'm sure it'll be perfectly nice enough for you to go hiking several days while you're here. And you won't get sunburned is the other kind of silver lining.
I'll be prepared for whatever the weather throws at me.
Excellent.
But, you know, Georgia is also another state that does not have enviable statistics when it comes to violence against women. We're one of the worst states with domestic violence homicides. So, you know, just because there's a lot of work to do doesn't mean that we're not excited and motivated to get it done. And I think we can engage your community to bring that excitement.
Well, good. I am sure that people will be excited. And Sarah Lynn, for listeners who are becoming more interested as our conversation continues, how might they go about learning more about AWARE, about Men Stopping Violence, and specifically about how to get signed up for this training opportunity?
Well, the best way might be to look at our website, which is awareak.org, O-R-G. Another very good way is to call us at 586-6623, and we'll be real happy to help.
And as you said a moment ago, you are willing to have a sliding scale for the tuition. And so if cost might be an obstacle, that should not prevent anyone from calling you up and talking about the opportunity.
Exactly.
Good. Now, Lee, and I'm sure Sarah Lynn's told you this, we do have a couple groups here in town, one of which my late father was very much involved with, called the Father's Cafe. And that's a very informal, small social opportunity for men who maybe aren't concerned about their propensity to violence, but just want to be supportive of other fathers to get together. So hopefully you'll have a chance to learn a little bit about some of those, you know, organic things that are going on in the Juneau community, because I imagine the men who participate in that group are going to be very likely target audience for this training.
I hope to see them there.
Yeah. So if you're listening, anyone who's involved in the Father's Cafe, you certainly should be calling up Sarah Lynn and figuring out how to get signed up for this. So again, Sarah Lynn, give us the particulars of the training.
The particulars are 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. next week, Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, depending on how you sign up. It's going to be at the Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall. We're really grateful for Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska for partnering with us on this training. And gosh, we're going to have some nice snacks. Nice presenters, nice group. It's going to be fabulous.
Excellent. And Lee, any other thoughts or observations you'd like to share with our listeners to entice them to come and take advantage of your presence here in the capital city and learn more about this important issue?
You know, I really liked your shout out to the Fathers Group. That those are the type of men who we really like to work with, men who are working to make change in their community. And this training is going to be geared well towards their needs, their interests, and those are the kind of work, those are the kind of groups that we work with here in Georgia. So if we can get them motivated to bring their people out, I think we're going to have a very successful training.
Excellent. Well, I very much hope that you do. I wish you safe travels coming up to Alaska. And Sarah Lynn, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I would just say if anyone needs any support around the issues of domestic or sexual violence, our services are free and confidential. Please feel free to give a call, 907-586-1090.
Very good. Well, Lee Giordano from Men Stopping Violence and Sarah Lynn Dabashnik from AWARE, thank you both for being on a Juno Afternoon. I wish you the best for your training next week. And if you're listening and you want to learn more, do give the shelter a call and they'll figure out how to help you be part of it.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Ben.
Yep.
And here is the writer's almanac for Monday. It's the 12th of June, 2017. Today is the birthday of Anne Frank, born in Frankfurt, Germany, 1929. Died at the age of 14 in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in Germany during the Holocaust. She and her family, four other people, hid for 2 years in an attic space above her father's business warehouse. It was in Amsterdam they'd left Frankfurt to go to Holland to escape from Hitler's Germany, where Jews could no longer ride public transportation, children forced to sit apart from non-Jewish children in classrooms. Anne Frank wrote, "My happy-go-lucky, carefree school days are over." Her father, Otto, had come up with a plan of escape, but before they could do it, Anne's sister, Margot, was called to a labor camp in Germany, and if she didn't go, the family would be arrested. And so the Frank family packed their suitcases. They walked to the warehouse in the rain, wearing as many clothes as possible. They would spend 761 days in hiding, small, cramped space, eight people there. They had rules about when they could use the bathroom, when to go to bed, when they could talk. We would probably not know anything about Anne Frank, but she left behind a little red and white checkered diary in which she wrote about their daily lives, and in which she wrote, "In spite of everything, I still believe that people are really good at heart." It was on this day, 1963, the civil rights leader Medgar Evers was murdered in the driveway of his home in Jackson, Mississippi. He was 37 years old. Member of the Ku Klux Klan, Byron De La Beckwith, murdered Evers at close range with a rifle. He was apprehended and tried, but two trials ended in hung juries. Medgar Evers said, "You can kill a man, but you can't kill an idea." It was on this day, 1967, the Supreme Court declared all state laws prohibiting interracial marriage to be unconstitutional. In the case of Loving versus Virginia, Richard Loving was white, his wife Mildred was black and Native American. They had previously been sentenced to a year in prison in Virginia for their marriage. And it's the birthday of Harriet Martineau, born in Norwich, England, 1802, who was interested in political economic theory. Adam Smith, John Stuart Mill thought that ordinary people should be able to study them too, so she wrote up their theories in common language, published them, and for a number of years they sold more than Charles Dickens's novels. Here's a poem for today, lines from Intimations of Immortality by William Wordsworth. There was a time when meadow, grove, and stream, the earth and every common sight, to me did seem apparelled in celestial light, the glory and the freshness of a dream. It is not now as it hath been of yore, turn wheresoe'er I may, by night or day, the things which I have seen I now can see no more. The rainbow comes and goes, and lovely as the rose, the moon doth with delight look round her when the heavens are bare. Waters on a starry night are beautiful and fair, the sunshine is a glorious birth, and yet I know, where'er I go, that there hath passed away a glory from the earth. William Wordsworth, from Intimations of Immortality. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Staples. Staples offers copy and print solutions for businesses, from color copies to presentations to promotional products. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples. It's pro time. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It is 41 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Monday, the 12th of June. And with me now in the studio are Art Roach and James Sullivan of Perseverance Theater. So, gentlemen, welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
And we're going to get to talk about many things Perseverance related, but what we're primarily going to focus on this afternoon is Treadwell Gold, which is the next upcoming special summer production over at Perseverance.
That's right. Yeah.
And I know a little bit about this, having been able to be part of the workshop cast last fall that read through kind of the first version of the script, which is based on a narrative nonfiction book by Sheila Kelly, who is a descendant of actual residents of the community of Treadwell.
Wonderful book, too.
It is a great book, and you can go and buy a copy of it at Hearthside, I'm sure, if you don't have a copy, and Sheila would love that.
Mm-hmm.
The book has been changed once and now changed again, and there's a script of a play that's going to be fully produced coming up very soon. So tell us a little bit, Art, about what theatergoers can look forward to in Treadwell Gold.
Yeah, Rachel Atkins, who's a Seattle playwright, where Sheila also lives, connected maybe a year or so ago now, a little more than a year, around the idea of turning the play into a book. It had been an idea of Sheila's for a while, since she finished the book, because what is wonderful about the book is how it sort of brings the life of the town together, and you get a sense of who the people are and what it was like to be there, which suggested it had the stuff of drama in it as well. The play is historical fiction, so there's a lot of truth in there, but all the characters have fictional names. Many of them are composites of people that were there. Sheila could explain who's who from the book and who's imagined. But it follows the arrival of a young engineer who's based on someone who did come the last couple of years of the life of the mine to look into ways to keep it safer and ways to increase production all at the same time. And as he works his way through that, he meets a young girl who was born there, daughter of the character that James is playing, a Swedish immigrant. And the parents are also kind of struggling with whether to stay, whether to go, whether their time in Treadwell is coming to an end, and what to do for their lives. So the two stories of this guy who's arriving, who really wants to be in Treadwell, and this family who's thinking maybe 15 years has been enough and it's time to make a move somewhere else, is kind of the tension of the story. And mm-hmm. then it all plays out against the backdrop of the last year of the mine.
And, of course, as most listeners probably know, but if you don't, this is the 100th anniversary of the end of Treadwell. Back in 1917, things came to literally a crashing halt.
Quite an abrupt end, yeah.
Yeah, quite an abrupt end. And so, James, what are your thoughts about the role that you're playing, and are you enjoying it?
I'm having a great time, mostly because, as you know, Ben, I live on Douglas. I actually live right around the corner from where the mine was. And like many people who've walked around the old beach there and everything and finding the old shards of the remnants and such that are around the woods when I moved here and went for my first hike down there, I was like, what is all this junk? What's going on over here? A couple years later, I bought a house there, and now I've learned more about the area, and it's a great opportunity. I've never done a play where I'm doing a play about what took place in my own backyard 100 years ago. That's certainly unique for me. And it's been a great opportunity to just to learn about, you know, because I've heard a few stories, like anyone who's here, and I've read some of the signposts that they've put up along the trails. But there's just, you know, there's this whole world that was right there, and getting a chance to put it on stage has been a lot of fun, and educate myself about what it was like then.
And we were talking just before we came on the air, Paulette Simpson with the Treadwell Historical Society actually was able to do a really neat outreach thing for the cast last week, and of course she's been instrumental, she and her group have been instrumental in putting some of this signage up, because if you don't know where things were, you know, some people are like, just like with the AJ Mine and how it used to dominate the view of downtown Juneau, if you didn't know what was there, it's really hard to believe. And that's true a hundredfold for the community that was Treadwell. It was huge.
Oh, yeah. But the numbers are staggering, what you think when you start learning about it. And what Paula did to bring it into a kind of she was able to take us on a tour of the whole area and tell us, you know, the superintendent's house was right here and these remnants here where the tennis court was built. And so we were able to walk through the whole thing, and she was able to give us the kind of the history of the mine from how it started in the 1880s into what, you know, the fateful day in April of 1917 when the mine collapsed, and talk about, you know, where we were walking. And those are, of course, the trails I walk my dog and run around with my kid, or, you know, go for a jog, and I've gone by them 100 times, mm-hmm. and didn't know what I was running by. And she was able, things that old posts that I just jog by or do on the trail, and explain to me why they were there and what they were doing and what this area was all about. And that was great. That was a great opportunity to learn more.
Well, she is definitely a wealth of information, and it's just obviously the timing this year is a wonderful thing. Art, let's talk a little bit about how it's possible to do this. Perseverance has not done summer theater since we did the three plays at the Jack a couple years ago, Vanya, Sonia, Masha, and Spike, and the other two shows. So as listeners know, Perseverance doesn't always do stuff in the summer. So how did that come into being?
Yeah, it's pretty rare. Well, in this case, the play that, as Rachel adapted the book, she starts it more or less at the July 4th before the cave-in. The cave-in happened in April of 1917, so most of the action of the play starts around the 4th of July 1916, and then the final scene is the 4th of July 1917, and then the contrast between the, you know, the activities of Treadwell before, while it was operating at full speed, and after, where the men are preparing to go to war, that's where a lot of them went, is the story. And so the July 4th date was really cool to see in there, and then being able to connect to the anniversary, the centennial of the cave-in, felt like the right way to go. So Sheila was really helpful about pushing up the schedule of getting it written, and Rachel has been a hero in terms of turning around fast rewrites. She's still doing work now, coming out of verse. Oh, what about this moment here? So that's been great, and it just felt like this was the time to do it. We also were fortunate to have a little bit of time in our calendar in the theater, because we had rescheduled the production of Steel Magnolias that usually would have closed about a week ago, and that's happening in the winter now. So we had a little bit of breathing space here to fit this in.
Right, after yeah. To Kill a Mockingbird closed, things are quiet over there.
Yep.
So let's talk about those particulars. When are the performance dates?
We open on June 23rd, that's a Friday, and it's just a two-week run, unlike most of our regular seasons. So this special event runs just 2 weeks. There'll be an additional extra performance on July 3rd. So if you're down there on Douglas, that's a Monday night, you know, and the fireworks will be that night also. So you go see a play, hopefully have a little party, mm-hmm. have some fun, and then watch some fireworks. It's going to be the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 23rd, 24th, and 25th, and then that following week, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, closing on Monday, July 3rd.
Okay, so that's only 8 performances.
8 or 9 shows, yeah.
And so I'm a subscriber, so I will probably call you up sometime tomorrow and say, please get me tickets.
Yep. And we'll do that.
Special price.
Right,
yep.
And if you're a subscriber, there is a reduced price.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you're not a subscriber, well, you should be, of course. And so that's...
You can do that, too.
You can do that, too, because there's a wonderful whole host of plays coming up next season.
Right.
So before we turn to that, Boston Christopher has returned to Juneau to be one of the actors in this play.
That's right.
Who are some of the other cast members that our listeners might be excited to come and see?
Well, they're all locals. It's a wonderful local production. Very excited. Boston Christopher is back in town after teaching down in the lower 48 this
He's
past year.
He's in Virginia, right?
Yeah, Virginia, yep. That's right. And he's back up for the summer. Excited to be working with him again. Christina Apathy is in the playing my wife. I think she can put up with me for at least 8 performances. Tom Robinoff is also in it. We have Frank Katas is doing the show also.
And he was part of the reading when we did mm-hmm. the stage reading.
Yes, yeah, he's been in with it. And then we have a couple of newcomers in this for this show. We have a young boy playing, Callahan Croteau. Yeah, we're excited to have him.
Playing your son.
Yeah, playing my son. Yeah, hopefully he can put up with me for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, James, you're being very optimistic about
yeah.
that.
We also have Hunter Hill, a young man at Juno Douglas High School who's been doing theater, and we put him in the play. And we have Rebecca Hassler also, who's a young lady who's done a bunch of theater with the Young Company and other productions in the summer program, who's now off to college but back in town for the summer, and she plays the young ingenue opposite Brian Crowder, who's also done a few shows here at Perseverance. It's a great cast, and all locals, and we're all, you know, excited. Everyone had a great time doing the tour with Paulette. It was amazing how many of them didn't know much about any of it.
It is pretty amazing, but of course, with the lack of signage before, that's the whole reason that Historical Society and their work yeah. is so important, because you wouldn't know unless someone... So, I mean, I've actually never gone on the tour either. I believe Paulette was actually able to take Senator Murkowski on a guided tour mm-hmm. when she was here the week before last, and I think that's just great as well, you know, to have our elected officials be aware yeah. of the rich history of Alaska's capital city. So, and let's talk now, Art and James, just a little bit about what listeners can look forward to in the upcoming full regular annual season at Perseverance.
Yeah. Well, it's opening in September this fall with a comedy called The Elaborate Entrance of Chad Deity, which is a play about wrestling, professional wrestling, and it's particularly about a wrestler whose job it is to lose, because you know they're all scripted, right?
No, so, professional wrestling yeah,
right?
is scripted?
Which means that...
Shocking.
That sounds like fake news to me. I'm
yeah,
going to have to fact check
exactly.
that one.
So the someone's job then is to take a fall so
right.
the champ can remain the champ. Until,
and I actually
know.
Got to see that at Woolly
yeah.
Mammoth
it's
when Jeffrey Herman was still
piece.
Running it. It is
yeah.
a great show. Yeah, about five,
yeah.
6 years ago I was there for
yeah.
a meeting, and it's a pretty fun show.
Shona Osterhout's directing that, and it's kind of a vehicle for Enrique Bravo, who plays the
what
Puerto Rican wrestler who loses. That should be a lot of fun. And then Joel Bennett, who's a local filmmaker, has written a play about Muzz and Joe Ibach and her friendship with the actor John Barrymore back in the 1930s when Barrymore used to come up and visit. So the play takes place over a couple of those visits, and it also includes Barrymore's wife of the decade, Dolores. So
it's got around a little.
Really, really nice play about friendship. What's next? Steel Magnolias.
That's right, Steel Magnolias. So we're going to do it this coming season.
It will not be postponed again.
Not again, no.
And folks remember the movie with Sally Field
yes.
and Dolly Parton, and yeah. so anyone who loved the movie is going to love the play.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's actually around the holiday time. It'll be playing in December. And I think it's not what you typically think of as a holiday play. It's not a holiday play, but it's a great family story. It's very funny, a lot of fun. A lot of hair, a lot of big hair.
It's a great hair period, 1987, 1988, yeah.
And then moving into 2018?
Another satire called William Inc., William Incorporated, about a Native man who incorporates himself under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. So he lives in an alternate version of reality where there are not only regional and village corporations, but personal corporations. And William incorporates himself in order to cope with starting a new job and starting a new family and some stresses in his life. And he thinks it'll be easier to have a board, you know, to help him out. And, of course, it doesn't work out that way. So if you've ever been in board meetings, it's a pretty hilarious play. And that'll be directed by Randy Reinholz, who directed They Don't Talk Back last season as well. So we're glad to have Randy back. Terrific actors involved in that. And then Cyrano de Bergerac. You want to talk about that one, James?
Oh, we've got to have a little bit of swashbuckling. We open with some serious wrestling later in the year. Then we go to big hair, then swashbuckling, the great Cyrano de Bergerac, the amazing love story.
And this is a kind of a different script than people may be thinking of if they're thinking about the Gérard Depardieu movie or anything like that.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, it's a new adaptation of it. Very faithful to the original, but it's a very... nice poetry in it.
And then there's one more piece wrapping up the season.
Yeah, The Arsonist, which is a National New Play Network role. It just closed at Azuka in Philadelphia, did very well. And it's about a young woman who is about to start out on her career burning down buildings for a living. And she's learned everything from her family, from her father in particular. And they, just before the play begins, they've done one last job together, she and her dad, and it did not go well. So over the course of the evening, you find out what went wrong with that job.
What could go wrong when you're a professional
arsonist? Yeah, exactly. A lot.
Yeah. Okay, I'm excited. I haven't read the script, so I'm very excited to learn more about that.
It also features some roots music and two terrific performers, Allison Holtkamp and Aaron Elmore. So really excited to have them.
Wonderful. Well, so that's next season. You can still subscribe and get a great reduction on those ticket prices. And I don't have to tell you, James, you can change them as many times as you want if you can't make it to whatever night. And it's a wonderful perk.
Yeah, that's right. That's the right deal. I think you've used that once or twice.
Yeah, once or twice. I'm not saying I've set the record or anything, but I'm busy. You know, that happens sometimes. So, well, good. So it's good to know that things are alive and well at Perseverance Theater, and we've got a summer play coming up. But again, only 8 performances of Treadwell Gold. So I will be calling you tomorrow when I'm at my office looking at my desk calendar, and I'm going to figure out which tickets I need to get.
All right, do it. We're ready. We're ready to sell some tickets. That's discounted pricing for the whole season. It's not a part of the regular season pricing that we've had. So we're excited to start selling tickets and excited to do a historical play about us.
Excellent. All right. Well, Art Roach, James Sullivan from Perseverance Theater, thank you so much for being on the show. And I look forward to seeing Treadwell Gold, and I hope many of our listeners will be there as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen.
This is Bird Note. At dusk, in the far western reaches of Alaska's Aleutian chain of islands, thousands of tiny whiskered auklets fly in to nest in cavities deep in rock crevices. Whiskered auklets are miniature relatives of puffins and murres. Charcoal gray, they're about 8 inches long and owe their name to the long, slender white plumes that sprout from their heads each summer. 2 rows down the side of the face and a 3rd set that stands like antennae above their eyes. These fancy white plumes very likely play a visual role in courtship and mate selection. But they're not just for show. The auklet's whiskers have an important sensory function, too. When the birds enter their cliffside nest cavities, they find themselves in utter darkness. The whiskers enable the auklets to feel their way along in the dark. Much like the whiskers of a cat, they're acutely sensitive. By summer's end, when nesting is done, whiskered auklets return to life on the open sea, like many seabirds. And with no dark crevices to navigate, and no mates to impress, they molt their multi-purpose whiskers. Until next spring. Today's show is brought to you by White Flower Farm, a family-owned mail-order nursery offering a wide range of perennials, annuals, and shrubs for early summer planting. More information is at whiteflowerfarm.com.
Support comes from the Copper Whale Inn in downtown Anchorage. Near business, arts, events, and more, with breakfast served daily. Reservations and information at copperwhale.com. The Copper Whale Inn, a gem in downtown Anchorage.
And it's about 2 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Thank you for listening to a Juno afternoon this Monday, the 12th of June. And the weather forecast is still for widespread rain showers with a high in the mid-50s and some light winds. It looks like that for the rest of the week, but it's not going to be raining sideways, according to the forecast, this weekend. So there's that to look forward to. Thanks again so much for listening to a Juno afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown.